it's time to go to heaven with number 11. But
you've
Jim,
you've been waiting to say that.
I have. You know, Jim's here today. Jim, we got you back on. I knew you were, jonesing and so had the shakes last week because he didn't get to be on.
You have to have a little hell with a little heaven then, right?
Yes.
Anytime I get to spend some quality time with you, Jerry, it's a good thing.
Oh, and we get to do that. We'll talk about a place we're going to do that here in a couple weeks on a Monday, Tuesday.
Perfect.
Exactly. Nate has fixed the technical difficulties. I think it ruined Jim's day. He won't admit that, but I do think that it was like,
you think there was like a pity party or a pouty pants or something?
I think Jim was pissed.
He's been he's been grumpy since last week. Not that you could tell.
I got up early to prepare.
Yeah. He said, no, it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me. And I was talking to him. But then he threw in a comment, well, I got up at 6 o'clock today to get ready. And I'm like, uh-oh, he's pissed.
Well, I left at 6 o'clock.
It took him to like 4 in the afternoon to admit it. So
is that after he got his nap?
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, well, lots to talk about today.
There's a lot. You've got like a show and tell. Your agenda is like about that long.
It's almost spilling onto two pages.
It's going to be a great show. Must watch.
My wife told me yesterday.
Okay.
15 minutes of preparation saves 4 hours a day. So I'm like, okay, so I guess I'll try to plan a little better. But I was late for the podcast today. You guys were waiting for me for, an extra 10 minutes.
It's because you were working on that 15 minutes.
15 minutes of preparation.
Correct. 15 minutes of preparation starts 10 minutes before we start the show, though.
Yeah, it makes us 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, I like your shirt, Ryan. Mike, did you get that out of my closet?
No. My friend bought it for me.
I think you stole it from me.
And no, you're not one of the three people that I like.
Shit.
Well, I knew that.
And you know, you're not.
Yeah, so I think the three the podcast are not on the shirt.
No. I'm doing the math. There's four, five, there's like six of us today, so.
Nope. No.
Right. So one of us doesn't like two of you. Each of us doesn't like two of us.
Oh, there you go.
Is that how you say that? Sure. Something like that. According to Ryan's shirt.
This is my personality summed up in about 8 words.
Well, I have a wife.
And 2 daughters.
2 daughters and a dog. So.
Any given day.
And I'm going to be a grandpa. So I'm like, yeah, something's going to happen here. Internally, I suppose, in the Root family household, if that shirt applies to me.
You can get one. Or them. That's 5 people and a dog.
Custom made. I think we know some t-shirt people.
I'll have to make one that says, like 5 people.
I like the IMCA New Supernationals and 5 people.
Ah, there's a few Supernationals.
Heck, yes, there is.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Lots of shirt ideas.
Yes.
Last podcast was, a week ago, roughly?
Was it a week ago?
I don't know, Jim. When was
it? Yeah, when was it? Jim, when did you get up at 6 in the morning?
We record these, and then Nate sometimes posts them right away or sometimes posts them the
next day. Has it been 7 days or 8 days?
8 days.
I still think we need to do a live call-in podcast.
I agree.
We do. Can you work on that, Nate? Can you start getting the request lines open?
That would be borderline 12. Torture.
Oh, but it would be fun.
Oh, it'd be...
Yeah, the audience can't hear Nate, but he says that maybe next
Can you
one.
Set that up for Jim?
I could think of a lot of other things I'd rather do.
Than take call-ins?
Than take call-ins.
Well, I mean, we'd have a screener, though. Remember,
we talked hire about an extra person. Yeah, exactly.
No, you said when we first started this, yes, let's do it. That would take the fun out of it to screen the call.
Right. Like, well, who was that? I called the president or something? Yeah.
But let's just back up and go back to I think it was it Christmas this year where they did live call-ins with the actual president of the United States.
Yeah, that's what we talked about.
And you said you wanted to do that.
Right, and you saw what the guy said to him, right? We all saw that clip.
Right, but you still wanted to do it for this. Even after that, you wanted to do it for the podcast.
I'll have to have my wife screen the calls then.
Oh, come on. Where's the fun?
That might be worth broadcasting itself. Your wife screen.
Yes.
We're going to get
her. Yeah. Brent, there's somebody on the phone for you.
We're going to get a Let's Go Brandon comment, I wore the shirt, but whatever.
That's cool, Brandon.
Yeah. Oh, well, no driving suit for me today.
Why'd you blow the zipper out?
Probably wrecked the car. There's no reason to drive.
No flatbill hat for me today.
Oh.
It's interesting because you can tell when Nate posts the podcasts. It's not immediate, sometimes. But when he posts them, start getting texts, getting fake Facebook messages. It, generates conversation, which is interesting. one of the conversations, my wife saw what I was wearing last time in the podcast, the driving suit and the hat, and she told me, you cannot wear that hat again. And I'm like, that's what I said. I was like, well.
She had people asking for that hat. There were people that wanted to buy that hat.
I'm just generally not a flat bill guy. You know, I mean, there's people that can wear flat bill hats.
I mean, you did look goofier than normal.
And people that can't wear flat bill hats. You know, I mean, it's a fact. I'm sure we all see it. I see guys wearing flat bills, and I'm like, that guy should not wear that hat. Yeah. And you see him wearing hats that.
And they take the flat bill and they turn the end out. They turn that.
And some dudes wear that stuff. But
then you get guys that wear hats like this.
Yeah, like
Dan Ratajczak hat.
Hey, one thing real quick, Fred. I missed the last podcast. Where did you get that driving suit at?
Where'd I get it at?
Yeah.
he got it from Pat Fagan.
We're not going to go there.
Apparently Jim watched the podcast.
Yeah. He got it from Pat Fagan.
It was a leftover.
Hey guys, Jerry Ryan. I hear Brett talking a lot about his wife, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why he listens to his wife, because I never do. Yeah. Works well for me.
Well, welcome to the podcast. Dan Ratajczak, promoter and recent divorcee at 141 Speedway.
I'm going to be careful and not step on that landmine. I'm just going to pretend like I didn't even hear Dan say that, because if my wife catches a... Sure. Yeah, happy wife, happy life.
Is what they say.
So,
what?
Dan's
making
faces.
Know why Dan's here?
Yeah, we do know why Dan's here.
Well, there's
here.
A big race what? Coming up.
He woke up at 6 o'clock for this, Jim, so let's not piss him off.
He's our distinguished guest for podcast number 11.
11.
141 Speedway. He's on my agenda.
Going on up there next week, Dan?
Boy, I don't know. Maybe a little.
Is there going to be any drinking on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday?
Drinking.
I got a little brown water here.
Yes!
Brown water.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Brown waters are the best.
It's like a Johnny Depp moment.
Thanks a lot for having me on the deal here. And yeah, we got the Clash of the Creek 14 next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
Yeah.
So, preparing, but we're gonna have a lot of fun along the way.
Well, it's 141. It's always fun.
Yeah, I would say I act like about 18 years old. That's what everyone tells me. I mean, shit, sometimes they even wear wigs and stuff. I don't know, but different hats, you know, but have a lot of fun. But on Sunday mornings, lots of times I feel like I'm 90, 18 on Saturdays. 90, just worn out. That's all right. We have fun doing it.
Fill us in on a little bit of the race. What do we got going on up there? What is it? How much is that to win again? I can't quite remember, Dan.
$10,000. $10,000 for the modifieds.
$10,000. Not $9,999, but $10,000.
Nope, I got an extra penny out of Jerry Van Sickle, so we made her around even 10 grand.
You contributed to the purse, Jerry?
Yeah, I put in that last penny.
That's a pile
You're
of
a
money.
Sponsor.
I mean because unfortunately nobody wants my 2 cents.
But they took 1 cent from me.
Exactly.
I gave him 50 50. That's the reason why we only took one, Jerry.
Yeah, that's a pile of money. Lots of big specials up at 141 this year. It has been for years. Did you say 14th? Did I catch that right? Is it you've been there for 14
it's
years?
The XIV.
Have you been at 141 for 14 years, Dan?
Have we been?
Yeah.
No, we've been here. This is our 8th year.
But Dan has raced and qualified for one of the Clash at the Creeks.
He has?
Yep.
I did, yep. Well, I don't know, maybe 2010, somewhere in there, 2011. So they had a rain out, and we had to go back a couple weeks later. And, yeah, I got into the big show, but I'm not going to tell you how I did.
Did you do better than that one time at Super Nationals on the last lap?
Oh, why do you got to go there?
I wish we had a clip of that.
We probably do.
Well, hey, it's raining here in Wisconsin. It just started raining. I could hear it on my window. Let's change the subject just a little, eh?
Oh, man. Man, you have okay. So since we touched, we're not going to change the subject. We're going to finish this one because this is a Super Nationals memory of mine. Dan's involvement in a situation at the end of the race, the A main on Saturday night, and I don't remember the exact year. He may, but I remember the situation. You know, it was back in the claim days. We didn't have a crate engine option. We didn't have a non claim option. We automatically claimed the top four at the event. Dan was running. You're in the top four. I don't know if it's third. You're running third, and McBurney was running fourth or second and third. They weren't winning. I remember that. Tangled up on the basically right across the or down the front stretch.
I got some pretty good video from the infield of that.
They were racing for fifth. That is what I assessed at the time, and it was. I was younger then.
It's been a few years. Wow.
It has been a few years. That was probably that I can remember the only time I've had Robert Lottie tell me to calm down. He told me to calm down on that whole situation because I was pretty upset because again, the circumstances of it all, and we could hash this out for a long time. But you got the Dan was involved in it. We claimed his motor. We claimed Joe McBurney's motor. Neither one, I think, was in the top four. Finished in the top four. I think we had about fourth or fifth.
Let me get this straight. They were running third and fourth, but they were racing for fifth.
Correct.
Okay. I thought I missed.
I don't miss those days. I don't miss those days. I don't miss those situations whatsoever. But you know, it's the circumstances played out the way we claimed their engines and sold them to the auction.
But I do believe that Dan Ratajczak and Rod McDonald hold probably one of the non-great statistics at Super Nationals, are the guys that have flipped the most at Super Nationals.
Yeah, that was, again...
Because then he flipped like a year later down the backstretch.
They didn't just slow up and just cross the finish line. Dan went across the finish line upside down, flipping three or four times, and he had to have destroyed his race car at the time. And then we drug it to the infield and pulled the engine out of it and sold it. You know, it's one of those memories that I will never forget. You know, I was involved in, I made that decision, to be quite honest. I made the decision to claim his engine, you know, so. And again, like I said a couple seconds ago. I do not miss those situations at all.
10 years later,
the truth comes out.
I don't think Jim didn't work for us at the time. I don't recall Dan, so
no.
I can't blame him for making that decision, but he would have made the same decision, I'm pretty sure, at the time, given the circumstances, because it wasn't
couple other times.
Correct. We've made that decision before the Super Nationals to claim a guy's engine when he's backing out of the top four in the last lap, in the modifieds particularly. We had at least one or two other situations like that. So having the claim in place, and again, we get a lot of crap over the claim engine or the crate engine, sorry. But having the crate engine in place and having an outlet for guys who don't want to get their engine claimed, I will take that situation and the circumstances that we get and the criticism, the nonsense, the straight bullshit, the fake news, and a lot of the other stuff that people say about our motives and why we have the crate engine in IMCA racing. I will take every one of those every day till the last day I'm at IMCA versus claiming guys' engines like Dan's in that situation. That's a fact. That was probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. And it sticks with you. And you got a guy like Dan who's incredibly good for racing in general. You know what I mean? He was a great racer. He still is a great racer, but he's a great spokesperson for racing, and he's stamping that in 141 every week. And so I would rather not be put in that situation ever again with individuals like Dan. There's lots of guys like Dan in racing. And have a crate option where a guy can get out of that and doesn't put us in that situation, doesn't put himself in that situation. So, long story short, I didn't intend to be windy, but.
Long story, you know, Brett, but you're right. Rules are the rules, right? You can take my modified today from Wisconsin. I can go to Bakersfield, California, or go to you know, New York or whatever, if it's IMCA sanctioned, I could drive in and race. That's the beauty about IMCA. And the rules are the rules, right? If they got a book, you break the rules, you get busted. It is what it is. But it's nice because it's supported all the way through. So IMCA is really a great thing for racetrack, period, because it just laid out really nice.
Yeah, that's the intent. We do our best to obviously design race car rules that make a lot of sense. Rules always come from something. You know, we don't just make them up. And I think we've talked about this before. But Dan's situation in itself at the Super Nationals is an excellent example of something that, in my opinion, demanded some change. It demanded a different perspective, an outlet, a different way of IMCA addressing the cost aspects of a competitive engine in modified racing. So, you know, that those situations do have end results where we make decisions based off of them. Some of those situations are terrible. Some of those situations are actually really good. But they all generate rules that at the end of the day, try to keep IMCA relevant, try to keep us popular, you know, and then we do our best to try to service those rules by attending races and stuff like that, like we're going to do next week at 141 for the Clash of the Creek.
It'd be good.
10,000 men. You
know, we know Dan's got the big special, but one second here. I'd like to talk about his weekly show.
Yeah, can you do anything to get, I mean, Dan, you get need to cars. Do whatever. What yeah, I don't know what you're doing, but you need to get more cars. I mean, you Come don't on, get enough Dan. Cars up there.
Have you hit 200
it's
yet
been
this
pretty
year?
Tough.
Yeah.
No, I got my butt chewed from Jim Stannard. He says, you got 197. Couldn't you find three more? Like, well, we were looking, but we couldn't find them.
I mean, you got two cars in your garage. You could have brought them out.
Yeah, Scott could have drove one.
Yeah, we still been short by one. Jim, I
have a stock car I could have drove up there.
I still would have got busted.
But, Dan, I do have a good idea for you. How about free admission? Free grandstand admission. Let's want to try that again?
Well, we might do that, but we have to have a little bit more control. You know, my buddy from Eagle there, he told me he filled me out, but he left a few parts out, right? So we tried this free admission thing. Oh, my goodness. It was really good. A lot of people. It was out of control. He forgot to tell me, limit the damn tickets.
All the Green Bay came.
All the Green Bay was there. You know how many people you could fit during the races in the infield at 141? Yeah. A shitload.
And you put them on a pontoon.
There was.
They were in the pond.
They were
pile.
All over, Jerry. Unreal. They were backed up. County R all the way to Highway 147 on the off ramp from the Highway 43. They were backed up. It was just crazy. It was fun, but it was crazy.
You run out of food?
Oh, we ran out of everything.
You ran out of beer? You ran out of beer?
Beer?
We ran out of beer. We went and get like 30 cases from one of the neighbors' gas stations. It was crazy.
Well, I guarantee it wasn't the neighbor off of turn one and two that helped you out.
No.
You know, but I'll tell you what, if, you know, it ought to be everybody's bucket list to go to 141 Speedway. Dan, I've said this a million times to a million different promoters. You guys got it done right up there. I mean, everything from when you walk into that place, it's clean. It's user friendly. It's customer friendly. Everything about that place is just unbelievable. And if you're going to go to one track, put one track on your bucket list. 141 needs to be right at the top.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Jim, thanks a lot for that. You know, but it does go with a lot of hard work. You know, my brother's there 7 days a week, right? There's always something to do. Toby, you know, came up, he drives 460 miles every weekend one way just to come to 141. He does do an announcing and stuff, but a lot of commitment on Toby's end. I mean, driving 460 miles every weekend and go through a Saturday night and then go home on Sunday. But we work good as a team, I do believe, and it's not just Toby and Scott and I, it's all the corner workers, the concessions, the beer sales, everyone. It's a lot of organizing, but it's a lot of people. It's just not, you know, Tracy, the flagman, boy, he runs the shows on Saturday nights, you know, and it's a lot of people, a lot of teamwork, but it's fun.
It's probably one of the could be the only track in the country where you can watch the races inside the bar. And the bar is not just open during race night. It's open during the week. It is a legit restaurant bar that you can watch the races from.
Yeah, it's unique that way. It really is. You know, we have a pond in the center and we try and put a few fish in there, but they get pumped up into Merle's spray nozzle. So that didn't work out very well. But anyway,
does that have anything to do with the fish fry on Fridays?
All you can eat.
Well, we tried that too, Jim, but that wasn't very good either. They were all kind of mashed up and stuff. You know, it wasn't the best.
So we can put that in our box of bad ideas.
Box of bad ideas.
Yeah. Well, listen, we only tell you when we got good ideas, right? All the bad shit that we tried, it never leaves the room, right? But there's been a lot of failures too. But I always say when you're in business and we're doing stuff, when the market's zigging, we need to zag, right? When they're turning right, turn left, right? So that's what we do. And some of it does work out real well. But some of it, it's like, oh boy, why'd we do that? But hey, this is how you learn, right?
I think it was last year at the Super Nationals, they did a little piece with Dan, you and Roger Hayden, and that was rather interesting to listen to you two collaborate on ideas. Kind of scary at that too.
Yeah, and that's what, like I say, from Roger, that's where we got that free ticket deal. Well, actually what we did is we gave the drivers, right, we gave the drivers as many tickets as they wanted and give them all to sponsors or businesses or whatever. I got that idea. I talked to Roger down there, and it was great, you know, but Roger told me, forgot one thing out, like I said earlier in this podcast, is that he forgot to tell me to limit the tickets, right? We gave out, I don't know, a lot of darn tickets. There was a ton of people, but it was about market awareness. We got them aware that 141s on County Trunk are, trust me.
The only thing I remember the most about it was Dan was out in front of the track on the road directing traffic all night.
Correct. And I seen Jim come in, and I seen him leave. You think he'd come and help me on the darn road? Hell no. He's sitting in the booth.
That was too damn dangerous.
Dan, it involved work.
Oh yeah.
Well, one more time.
Looking forward to it next week.
One more time. Give us a rundown on next week. What we have going each day, and real quick, and any information like that.
Yeah. So on the 14th, you know, we have Test and Tune. That's open to anybody. And they come and tune their cars in. We prep the track just like a race night, and they test and tune and tweak, and that goes from like 6 until like 10 o'clock. And then Wednesday night, we have our qualifying, right? We're going to find out the top 10 guys who's going to start, and then they redraw the next day out of a hat what position they're going to get. And then on Thursday, we'll have the last chance qualifiers. And then we will finish the field out. Oh, and we have to have a little duck suit pull numbers or whatever. And I don't know where the hell your duck suit was. I was looking for yours, but it is what it is. But we try to have a little fun along the way with all this stuff. And again, I do feel like I'm 18 when I'm there, and we have a blast, right? You know, and it's just fun.
It's a fun place to be in a, you know, obviously for the racers, it's a fun place to race. You know, I think Brett, you've always said racers vote with their trailers, and that's kind of obvious up there at 141.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's not just modifieds next week either. You got stock cars and you got sport mods. Yes. I think both nights, Dan, 1,000 to win each division. So All Correct. Sorts going on for everybody.
Yep.
And one could argue, obviously, if you look at MRP or if you just, if you know, obviously we get the car count reports here, but one could argue that IMCA Stock Car Racing is probably as good as anywhere in that Green Bay area. I mean, stock car racing has always been very, very solid up there. Mm-hmm. But some of our most decorated stock car racers come out of that area. And then, you know, obviously Dan's got a big stock car race at
King of the Creek.
Well, in July. Next month. So
10,000 to win for IMCA.
So King of the Creek in July.
Yep. So if you're a mod fan. On the
16th, 17th. What's that? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I was going to say, since I'm stepping on you. If you're a mod fan, 141 has something to offer. If you're a stock car fan, 141 has something to offer. And I think even the other division, Sport Mods.
Sport Mods got 10 grand to win in August.
Yeah, I mean.
The Captain Jim of the crease.
So let me ask you this, Dan, because this is an ongoing debate inside our office, outside our office, among promoters and among racers. 10,000 to win is, in your opinion, good or bad for the division to pay that much to win? Be honest. People want to know these things.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is good and it is bad, Brett, right? It gets awareness. $10,000 is a lot to win. Brings in some other out-of-town people that really have their stuff together. But we don't want to. We want to take care of our local guys too, because they're supporting us every week, right? So we don't want to. $10,000 might scare some of the local guys away, you know. But overall, I think it's good for the. It's definitely good for the industry, the arena that we're in. We got to keep our arena strong, you know. We've lost a few racetracks in this neck of the woods in the years, but it's competition, but it's not, right? So. We have to keep our arena, meaning IMCA race cars and our other divisions. We have to keep them strong. You start losing racetracks, you know, our arena goes backwards, and we don't need that, and nobody needs that. We have to keep our stuff strong.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, and Jim and I have talked about this a lot. You know, there's a fine line there. You know, having, you know, racing pay too much can have an adverse effect on the divisions. It can scare people who just don't think that they're going to be competitive against people that may be coming from out of town, a local racer. It can scare them away. We see it. We see things like that happen, you know, but then you, on the flip side of that, you have people, you see it pretty consistently saying, you know, how come it doesn't pay more? How come it doesn't pay more? You know, so there's a fine line there, and what that threshold is in IMCA, I'm not sure if we could even answer that ourselves. We had a policy way back. You go back a handful of years, maybe a dozen or so. We had a policy at IMCA that we wouldn't sanction any modified race that paid more than $5,000 to win. You know, and we didn't. We stuck to that for many, many years. And we got rid of that. We decided to step away from that. And you know, we've got. You know, races like the 10,000 win events at 141 in multiple divisions. That is it hurting the division? One could argue it doesn't. Is it helping the division? One could argue that it does, or vice versa. You know, I mean, it really just kind of depends, because you see how the racers react to it. You know, and when you got big car counts like you got up there weekly at 141, when you run a special that pays that more, you would think that it would be a simple algorithm or function of math, that it just, everything just gets bigger as with it. But that is the case. I mean, you get great car counts for those specials up there, but you know, it's, we'll have people say, oh, there should be more cars. I'm like, Jesus, there's 80 of them. You know, I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah. Like last year for the Clash of the Creek, 75 modifieds from, I think there was like 9 different states.
Right.
And Johnny Whitman, you know, local hometown guy, the old Hitman, he picks it up. You know, I mean, there's been some great finishes up there. I mean, who can forget the Kyle Strickler, Benji LaCrosse, 0.07 of a second finish for 10 grand. And
yep,
there's been some great, the racetrack up there produces great racing. Just, and a lot of it is just the shape of it.
It's very conducive.
It's like big on one end.
it's a really good fit for our cars. And, yeah. and again, you know, it would be nice if we could say that we're smart enough that to make this stuff all happen on purpose. But we aren't. You know, some things just happen. And the combination of what we have for rules, including the tire on our cars, in conjunction with a racetrack like 141, just puts on some fantastic racing. And if you're a dirt track fan, I mean, how can you not watch? You know, I mean, it's just, it's fantastic. And, they, you know, and back again to the subject of what it pays to win, you take that out of the equation, right? And you just look at the names of the IMCA competitors that are competing at 141 or in that Green Bay area, and it's pretty decorated. Yeah, there's a lot of national champions, super nationals champions, racers up there that have won and continue to win our biggest shows on an annual event. So that too also has a little bit of an impact on special events and weekly racing. It's stunning when you look at 30 to 40 cars weekly at any weekly show, and then you turn around and have a special event up there. You know, guys who race for a living, so to speak, or go to those specials exclusively and don't race a lot of weekly, they're going up to an area where the weekly racing is as strong as it is anywhere, and the racers in those shows weekly are as good as anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just like last week at 141, 41 Modifieds.
Yeah,
you got you know, you got names like Todd Dart that everybody knows, Greg Gretz, Sean Kilgore, Benji LaCrosse, Lucas Lambries. I mean,
Mullins.
I mean, that's just Mike Mullins. You know, Hunter Parsons. I mean, you look at any of these guys,
it's a who's who.
Any generally. Of those guys on a weekly night at 141,
that's a weekly show,
have a shot at picking up. Well, as you see, there's been locals that win the
just,
10 grand.
Yeah, and that's just mods. That's not, you know, not even mentioned stock cars or sport mods, where the same thing plays out.
See, there was 35 sport mods and 45 stock cars last week at 141.
Look at the aerial of that track.
You got, and they had 30 sport compacts.
I think Nate's got it up. Everybody can see that, right? That's 141 Speedway.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, what a lot of people don't know about 141 is it started off, and Dan can testify to this, it started off as an asphalt track. I've seen some video of asphalt racing there, and then when they went to dirt, they went to redesign it, and they were going to make it bigger a little bit, and when they went over to turn two, and then you see how it does this weird, like, straight, they were actually building into the neighbor's property, and then that's why they... Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Dan, but that's why they configured it the way it is, because they had to bring it back in within the property limit, didn't they?
Correct. That is correct.
It's very unique.
Jerry, and, you know, Bruce and Renee Connor, they switched it from asphalt to dirt, and I want to say it's like 2009-ish, 2010. A little story about that. Well, I raced for just about 30 years, right? I started off with a little street stock, and, oh, man, I was absolutely terrible. But I have my first win at 141 Speedway with a street stock. It was my first win ever. And now I have the basically being proud with Toby and Scott that we actually own the place, right? I mean, it's really crazy. I won my first damn race there, and sitting in my office right now, I can see the picture. It's just, I can't ask for more. It's been good. It's been fun.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yep. Well, we sure do appreciate everything you do for IMCA on a weekly basis, and obviously your specials that you have. And I know I'm speaking for myself. I look forward to getting up there. It's always a great time at 141. I mean, they treat you great up there.
Are you going next week?
Are you?
I asked the question first.
Are you?
Oh, goodness, I got 2 weeks in a row.
Like,
thank goodness they serve brown water at the left turn lounge. That's all I've got to say.
Travel buddies.
What's that? Travel buddies. Yeah.
Travel buddies.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Shotgun, Jim. We're leaving Tuesday. We'll come back right after the races on Thursday.
Why wouldn't we?
Yes.
But
no, it's a good time. 141.
You can ride with him that long?
I'm recovered. I'm almost fully recovered from our last trip, so I'm doing good. We had a marathon trip, me and Jerry.
Yes.
We bonded. Yeah.
It wasn't like a father.
I don't think that's how Jerry describes it, Jim.
Gold bonded.
Gold bonded.
No, it's going to be good. At the end of the one, I mean, the Clash of the Creek, I've talked to, I know there's at least a handful of drivers from Arkansas going to head up for the weekend and be up there. I know some guys came in for the weekend last weekend, and we'll race this Saturday. Of course, you'll race your Saturday program, but then you'll take the Saturday after the Clash off. You kind of get recovered and recouped and clean the place up from all the festivities. Wow. Camping available, right?
Correct.
You camp there on the
camping
grounds.
Camping available.
Some of the nicest bathrooms you'll find are there.
They're very nice facilities up
they
there.
They are.
Well, we're looking we're definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's we're looking forward to having you guys come up. And like I say, IMCA has been really good to us. Overall, and I'm not just saying that because Brett is on the field here, but it's been very good.
How are you going, Brett?
Even though he doesn't like that, I was racing for fifth, but I don't understand that yet to this day.
Hey, I forgive you if you forgive me.
But anyway,
Brett would have been fortunate if he could have made it to fifth in his racing career.
Well, no, time out. Remember, we've got that picture that he's giving me now.
You
he's
should got see the look I'm getting.
Holy goodness.
Wow, daggers. You want a couple.
What's our what's our next segment of this show? Is it a show and tell segment, Brett?
We've got
40 minutes in.
I always
this is going to be a long one.
Well, we got a little off track on our agenda, but we're on our agenda still. You know, it was raining just like cats and dogs when we walked into the podcast. It was just raining buckets outside today, and it prompted me to throw the subject of rainouts in particular into the podcast, because I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's something that race fans and racers, especially these days, are every year somewhere, someplace, lots of times, almost every facility that we sanction has had a rain out. You know, I think generally speaking, most promoters probably factor in about 20% of their events getting washed out due to weather. And you know, with it raining like this, I mean, they rained out here on Sunday, and you know, I get the text from the Speedway. It was like, I think it was around noon, maybe even before noon. It was fairly early.
Yeah.
So you have that situation, right? And he's rained out Benton County Speedway here in town 6 hours before they are scheduled to even put cars on the racetrack.
Yep.
You know, and hours before anybody's scheduled to even be allowed into the gates.
Or before you have to leave to get to the races.
Is it a bad call? You know, you go back a handful of years and people would have been pissed about that. You know, why are you canceling races so early? You know, but you look at stuff like everything we have in our pocket. You know, we have access to very accurate weather all the time, and we use it very, very effectively at events like the Super Nationals, which is, you know, what, 8 days of racing. We're bound to have something thrown at us that we aren't anticipating. But, you know, so you in today's day and age, when we all have weather in our pockets, you're not going to fool anybody. They're not going to pick the phone and say, hey, are you racing tonight? And you're going to say, oh, the weather's perfect. When they know in their pocket or right in front of their face is the likelihood of a weather radar that's forecasted or current, you know? And so you can't really fool the fans or the racers. So when you make a call early like that these days, I thought it was a pretty good call.
It was very accurate.
Sure shit. When it said it was going to rain in Vinton that day, it rained
at 6 or 6:30, whatever.
And it was raining so hard Sunday night. I think we got 2 inches of rain here before the races would even have been over.
Yeah, I had an inch in my rain gauge.
Substantial
in the first hour.
Well, it probably rained. I mean,
so it was a great call.
I mean, it's a good half inch. Rainouts are they're one of those things that you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Let's take Boone, for example. It took a big beating.
We were going
to
get
there. But here's the deal. The people that go to social media, and I mean, I'm soapboxes on, and I'm going to get on it. Open your checkbooks. If you want to see the races, and it would have taken at least 2 hours to get that place in shape, and then it had taken probably another 5 or 6 hours for Rod on Sunday and Monday to get it back together just so we could have had one night of racing.
Well, yeah. Not only that, Jerry, what happens in a lot of those situations is the track's not going to be perfect when they're faced exactly. with those elements. And so then what happens is
there. Even a track like Boone that has the ability to
then what happens, guys go out there, the track's rough, they tear their stuff up, and then the promoter gets blamed for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, damned if you do, damned if you
don't. No win situation.
No promoter wants to see, and I'm sure Dan would speak upon this. No promoter wants to see people go out there and tear their race cars to pieces. That's not the goal of any weekly show. You know, a promoter would say, oh, boy, I hope everybody tears their shit up and has to spend tons of money.
Oh, that's what I hope for every Friday. We tear it up so you can't come back next week.
We see that stuff as officials all the time, you know, under good circumstances or even questionable circumstances with a rough racetrack, and it makes your stomach hurt. You know, I myself have said, boy, I'd hate to have to pay for some of that stuff because you have to feel for the competitors in those situations. So in today's day and age, especially again, when everything's so expensive, when gas is so expensive or fuel is so expensive to get to the racetrack. So racetracks that can avoid these situations, like Vinton didn't waste anybody's money that day. Not a single person. Maybe his own.
They wasted their own by Benton getting County prepared.
Correct. You know, Corey wasted Corey's money getting the racetrack ready up until that point.
Every night there's a rain out. I mean, and you don't pull your race car to a racetrack, you're out no money. But a promoter can be anywhere. Substantial. I mean, if I don't race on Friday night, I still have to pay the $1,000 rent.
Exactly.
I mean,
what's the promoter's cost to open Marshalltown up? If you had to guess?
I mean, if I had to guess, by the time got going and got to this point by what you have to do. Minute the gates open.
$5,000, $10,000.
Yeah, you're probably that, you
you're
know.
You're into it for thousands.
Yeah, you're in for thousands of dollars. Then it rains out. I don't get to recoup that money back.
So
I don't get it back.
So you take all the food home that's prepped and you just eat it all, right?
No, usually we can use it next week.
Well, isn't but that
you
obvious?
Take all the buns and you just take them back and they give.
Yeah,
they money
yeah.
Back
they, I mean, we just we just take the receipt and right? Oh, can I have my money back?
Hey,
and
change my mind.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's expensive for racetracks to go through that.
Oh,
as
there's
well.
So many. There's all those hidden things, you know. And we in this room have known, and Jim, we know it being on this side of it. But I think sometimes, you know, the average fan and the racer needs to have...
Gets lost a little bit.
Gets lost, and you need to know what a promoter goes through before you start getting on the Facebook or before you start running their name through mud of, I can't believe, I've seen worse, put yourself in their shoes. That's all I've ever said. Put yourself in their shoes, and would you take and... Would this be a good business decision for you to do? If you had to write the check, would you do it? And then think about how you want to comment after that.
You know, you said we have the weather in our pocket. You're not going to fool anybody. That affects if people are even going to go. Yeah, those racers want to go. Correct. There's a lot of fans that will not show up if they know the weather's bad.
Hey, Ryan, it looks like it's going to rain tonight. Let's not go to the races,
I have always said I will never question a promoter on their desire to cancel a program. It's a business decision. And if they are a business that's open 20, maybe 25 nights a year, and this one bad night could affect them for the rest of the year, you can't question that.
Yeah, it's easy to lose money. It's hard to make it. Oh, it's easy to spend money. A
rainout can be a make or break situation. Right. I mean, you may have made a little bit last week, and then now you spent it you gave it right back, you know. And that's a risk we take as promoters.
Yep.
In, you know, but it is, you've got to make smart decisions too. You can't make dumb ones.
Yeah, you have the Vinton situation on Sunday, then you have the Boone situation on Saturday night. You know, two opposite, similar, obviously, end results, but two opposite kind of situations where one cancels super early and one cancels essentially almost last minute. But
and that shot of rain that came through Boone, that was not even on the radar.
Correct.
It just boom. Was
it's
like that.
It's that unknown variable that gets thrown at racetrack operators. Any, in my opinion, this isn't just racing. You could talk about concerts. You can talk about indoor concerts, outdoor concerts. There's all kinds of weird things that when it comes up to promoting an event that gets thrown at promoters, and you know they have to make those decisions on the fly. Boone did what they had to do, and then you get into issues like refunds, you know, which is a whole nother subject. You know, people want to take to the internet and accuse people of ripping them off or all these other kinds of things. I in particular, and I'm going to do a comparison to a concert, right? Yep. I do like to go to concerts. My wife loves to go to country concerts. Jim has probably never been to a country concert in his life, right, Jim?
He's been to a lot of wrestling matches and boxing.
Two types of music, country and western, that you won't see me at.
Exactly. So I'll give you an example of me personally. My wife, she buys tickets for anything close that anybody. She's got Mark Chestnut tickets. Jim probably does not know who Mark Chestnut is. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not a huge Mark Chestnut fan. Kind of
Jim's well country round, music. Jim's well-rounded, but just in certain areas of his body.
Correct.
In
we got tickets. We bought tickets under one pretense, when the date was going to be. Well, guess what? They've canceled that concert at least once since then, or postponed it. One was for his health, I think, or something like that. One was a venue issue or something like that. So they've rescheduled it for like September 8th or something like that.
You can go. You got nothing going on that week. Yeah, that sounds like an open date in your schedule.
So I guess would it behoove me to head to Facebook, maybe go on Mark Chestnut's personal page.
Are you getting ready?
Or the concert venue's page and accuse them of ripping me off? They're not going to give me my money back.
No.
They're not going to refund my tickets.
Here's
a question. I can't go. Is that their fault or my fault? Well, it's probably a combination of both, to be quite honest. Really? I mean, I didn't buy the tickets under the pretense that it was going to be during Super Nationals, but I can't go now that it is rescheduled.
And you realize you can.
I could. Yeah.
Jim will be there.
I've missed the Super Nationals twice in the time that I've been at IMCA. One was for the birth of my daughter, Alyssa, who was born on September 9th, 1998. I think that's her birthday. She's 23.
You'll find out if it's not.
You'll find out. Hey, remember you said people text you when these get posted? You'll be getting one.
I want to steer her away from the podcast.
I missed like 2 days of Super Nationals that year when she was born. But then a couple handful of years ago when she was playing volleyball, my oldest daughter, Alyssa, had a volleyball game scheduled. It was one of the nights of Super Nationals, and I jumped in the car and drove all the way to like Amana, clear back over on the east side of the state of Iowa, went to a volleyball game and drove all the way back to the Super Nationals and caught the features. But generally speaking, I don't miss Super Nationals, but that was
well, yeah, that
the
was
two
like,
occasions
yeah.
I recall. Is just more,
you know, talking back to the ticket deal, the last concert I went to, it got postponed. You know, pandemic came, and then there were just kind of a couple different venue things, like you said. And there were two ladies that walked in, and we were talking to them, and they'd bought their tickets, and somehow their tickets had got voided. They didn't do anything, you know, because it was, we all got an email. If you do this, we'll send you a refund. If you do not do anything with this email, you'll keep your tickets. We checked on our tickets. We kept them. These ladies did the same thing. Well, guess what? Their tickets somehow disappeared. They had to buy two more tickets to get in.
Probably pissed them off.
They were excited to be there. They were not happy, but I don't really, I didn't see them complaining because this is a concert they wanted to go see. But, I mean, it happens. And like you said, there's no gray area. You either have a ticket or you don't.
Yeah,
you
these
get
days.
Get your money back or you don't.
Correct.
These days, like StubHub, you can buy tickets on StubHub and you can actually get scammed.
They're good about
refunding them, but you can get scammed on some of those ticket services and actually buy a fake ticket, show up to the venue and not have tickets. Somebody's in your seat. It's like, well, I got the same ticket.
No, you don't even get, you put it on the.
It's kind of crazy.
That doesn't work.
Thankfully, most of our situations that our racetracks are in, they don't have that complexity when it comes to ticket buying.
Yeah.
You know, but refunds are always an issue. How does the track handle that? When does it rain out? All those kinds of things. And I think most racetracks, I think every promoter, generally speaking, has good intentions when it comes to refunding or when it comes to honoring that ticket at the next show. You know, they're not taking your money and not giving you something. They're still, I think most promoters are going to honor that stuff one way or the other. You get into some really interesting situations depending on when the event rains out now. You know what I mean? Like in the middle of two features.
If you get your heat races in, you know, that's always been the industry standard. Once the heat races are done, it's a show. We'll run double features or we'll start where we left off last week.
I had a comment made to me about IMCA TV, in particular about Boone's rainout last Saturday. And somebody said, hey, do I get my money back? And I'm like, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the nice things about IMCA TV and how we're handling issues like refunds in there. Because, you know, if you buy it and you watch, we know how many minutes you're watching. We know when you're watching.
You can track it.
If somebody says, hey, I bought IMCA TV for Boone Speedway and I want my money back because I didn't watch it, and then you go back and see that they watched 90 minutes or 80, or, you know, 2 hours or whatever it may be, you know, because you get into complete computer issues with streaming, you know what I mean? Some people want refunds based on that. But an issue like a rainout, we're able to refund almost instantaneously, a partial refund if we run some of the show, or a complete refund if we don't run any of the show, like Boone Speedway. I mean, yeah, they just automatically hit a function, and there's it just refunds everybody F7. That has purchased. Yeah.
In their defense, though, if I were to pay and listen to Jerry talk for 2 hours, I might be requesting a refund. Yeah,
exactly. Well, let's move on from rainouts. We've talked about that enough. Do you want to have like the tech tips of the day, or the
show and tell?
Okay, so I did bring a couple of I brought a couple of stock.
Are those shock absorbers?
I brought a couple of what are intended to be stock car shock absorbers.
Oh, okay.
A 7-inch shock right here, and a 9. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we came across this last week in tech and in a disqualification. You know, we have a rule that states that a variety of things, but I'm stock cars in general is what I'm talking about. So I don't want people to get confused with a hobby stock. Stroke issue. We have a stroke rule and we have a compression rule. If you're in tech at an IMCA event, these shocks, if we take them off in post-race tech, must compress all the way down. I should be able to push this all the way down with the travel indicator and push it to the travel indicator. Same with the 9. Both must compress. Also in the stock car rules, we have the rule that says maximum 7-inch stroke on the front, maximum 9-inch stroke on the back. So there's a combination of these rules that work with each other that I think is a topic on Facebook right now. I've tried to participate in some of it. I can only stamp. I will say this. I'll get this out in front of my face. I will only participate in some of this Facebook stuff for a while, but then I get to where I meet my limits on what I'm gonna people are gonna say, whether it be about me personally or whether it be about IMCA or whatever it may be. We do our best to make really good race car rules and enforce them fairly, consistently, impartially. You know, all on and on and on. We don't base our decisions on what kind of shock you have on your car. We don't base our decisions on whether or not they're a sponsor of IMCA. We base our decisions on the product and the rule we write at the time we're asked to do it. And so I'm going to put the 7-inch one down. But so we had an issue on the stroke rule. So in inspection, we're just going to check that, right? We just take a tape measure and we just check it. And I don't know if probably can't see it that close. It's if you check the stroke of this shock right now, which is what I'm doing from top to bottom, which is going to be basically from the bottom of the shock body to the jam nut, what I would call a jam nut. Mm-hmm. This one measures right at 9 inches, maybe a 16th of an inch shorter. So, you know, 8 7/8, right?
Yep.
So the issue we had with a racer, he had a 9.5-inch shock stroke, right? And he had a travel indicator on it. This is a travel indicator. This is used to tell how much the shock's traveling, right?
Yeah,
we factor this travel indicator in that measurement, to be quite honest. People ask how we enforce this. So if I was going to measure this shock in tech in a race.
On a sap,
in
a race,
and an inspector calls us and say, what's this measure? I'd push the travel indicator down. The shock's fully extended, and it says 8 3/4 inches. So this is going to be a legal IMCA stock car shock. 9 inches of stroke, actually with the indicator factored in, 8 3/4 inches of stroke.
Because the indicator can come down, and if you hit it hard enough, it would bottom out on the body.
Correct. And people say, well, do you count that? Well, yes, it's a travel indicator. They say, no, it's a bump stop. Nah, not really. It's really a travel indicator. And we could argue bump stops and travel indicators and how we define those two. But then the shock must also compress, and I'm probably not going to be able to push this one down. I can. We'll compress this thing all the way as well.
Gym.
So, yeah. This thing's got like 3,000 PSI in it. I'm making it look easy. See, so it's bottoming out more than likely. It's against the travel indicator. So the shock fully compresses and extends no more than 9 inches of stroke. So this is a perfectly legal IMC stock car shock. Now, if this is 9.5 inches and this travel indicator is 1/4 inch, it's going to measure 9 1/4 and it's going to make it illegal. People are going to say, well, I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can. That's how we interpret the rule that we wrote. And that's how we enforce it. We do that for the 9-inch shocks. We do that for the 7-inch shocks. And that those division in the stock car division isn't the only one that has that. But that's a pretty hot topic right now on Facebook as to our reasoning behind that. But to me, it's a limiter. It's meant to be a limiter. It's a suspension issue that we think needs addressed. And we've had this rule in place right now. This will be the second racing season. So it shouldn't be new to anybody. I got in a little bit of an argument with a guy about we should tell everybody what shocks are illegal. We should have some sort of an APB, I guess.
It's not the shock that's says, illegal.
Correct. And not only, it's not, I mean, first off, this is a BHE, Bob Harris Enterprises shock. It's an AFCO shock. Mm-hmm. You know, AFCO makes
because shocks. You can take the shock apart and you can change the inside of the shock for a longer or shorter stroke. The way it reacts.
So you have a racer that says you should tell us every shock that's illegal and you should put it out. Well, the problem is not every shock is illegal, and not every shock, let's say, of that particular series could even be illegal because a guy like Bob Harris could alter it. He could change that. He could take the 9.5 inches and make it 9.
Ring.
So for us to say that a 26 series QA1 shock is illegal isn't necessarily a true statement. But at the end of the day, the racer still has to be responsible for what they have on their race car. This is a very well-published rule, and I don't think it's our responsibility to pick up the phone and call every individual racer and inform them what is illegal in IMCA and what's legal. I don't have a big enough staff.
Mr. Root?
We don't have enough time. Yeah, Jim, am I talking
about you're racing an IMCA stock car this year. Is that correct?
Correct.
I'm here to tell you that your shock is illegal.
This one's legal.
Well, the shock Mr. you have IMCA. On your car is illegal.
Well, no, it's not.
Well, it measures 9.5 inches.
Point well taken. So, I mean, again, you know, we try to, at the end of the day, you know, racers get caught in these situations because this is actually a rule that we changed in 2020. So racers get caught in these situations. But here we are a year and a half later, and you wouldn't think that we would necessarily catch this, but we do. And some racers don't know. And is that our fault? Maybe a little bit on the communication, but we publish our rules. We answer our phones. If anybody has any questions, we try to answer them.
The backstory is, before this rule came out in the rule book, Dave Brin talked to this particular manufacturer before the rule was even printed and said, hey, listen, are you going to have a problem with this? They said, yes. He gave them a way to fix it that wasn't going to cost them much money. They chose not to inform the racers of the problem.
Well, period. I mean, amen. One could make that argument for sure. You know, I don't want to throw any racers. I don't want to throw any manufacturers. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. The bottom line is, you know, as a sanction, we try to make rules. We try to enforce them. But you have these situations present themselves. And I don't know how you can communicate that any better than what we're doing, at what we have been doing. You know, we got the podcast to talk about some of this kind of stuff. I think people like to inquiring minds want to know. And we want our approach in inspection is very consistent. You know, we're not out to disqualify everybody that races IMCA. And if you ask Dave Brand, if he was sitting here, he'd tell you what I tell him about this. And the general approach that we take is if you're disqualifying a bunch of racers after an event is over in post-race inspection, as an inspector, you're failing. That's the bottom line. If you're failing, if you're disqualifying him, the goal is not to disqualify everybody that shows up. The goal is to make sure that the cars are legal. And if you do that effectively prior to events, during events, after events, generally speaking, it cleans up the issues because other racers see what's going on. They may not be in tech, but, oh, they're checking their shocks. Let's check ours. You know, you get those things. We see it at Super Nationals. We see it at big events. I'm sure Dan experiences it because he's got fantastic tech at 141. We see this process play out all the time. But the goal for us as a sanctioning body is not to rain on everybody's parade, to crap on everybody's win, to take their trophies away, to send them home with no money. It's never the goal of any racetrack.
No, I mean, if that's what the business we're in, we wouldn't be doing it.
Correct.
If everybody, correct. Oh, I'm going to go to this racetrack, I know they're going to DQ me. I mean, it's like we've talked about. I mean, and Super Dave and I have talked about it. It's educate, then regulate. If we educate you on how to do it and you don't do it that way, then we have to regulate the rules. But as long as you take our education and what I'm telling you to not do and you don't do it, you never have to worry about that.
It's the definition of what a sanction is.
The one thing on this particular instance that we're talking about, the drivers handled it very well. It's some of these other people that jump on Facebook that really not handling it quite so well. But, you know,
they don't necessarily know the whole story. And they can't necessarily speak for us. Dan, what do you let Dan talk for a second? He's with the delay, it cuts him out.
So, Brett, I said that earlier. That's the beauty about IMCA, right? You got a book and you got rules. Follow the rules. It's real simple. If it says 9 inches, how can you go 9 1/4, 9 1/2? It is what it is. Again, like I said earlier, I can load up my modified right now. I can go to Bakersfield, California. The rules are the rules in Wisconsin, 141, or Bakersfield. That's the beauty of IMCA. They write the rule book. We need to follow it. We don't follow it, consequences. But on the other hand, the other hand too, Jim, you were saying it's the weekend warriors on the keyboards. The racers understand. They know the rules for the most part. Sometimes we've got to help them a little bit, figure it out. But you got to be consistent, right? I always tell the guys at 141, and all tracks should do this, and I don't know why they don't, but top four guys going into the center, if you're going to check the right front shock or the right front spring on one car, you check it on all of them. If you don't check nothing that night or mufflers or whatever it is, check it on all of them. Be consistent. That's one of the things I think part of the reason, probably a small part, but a part that we're somewhat successful at 141, because when they sign in, they at the back gate, anybody can win because we try to have all the rules enforced. If it's always somebody that comes in, they're always cheating, the promoters or the tech guys let them go. It's like, why am I going to go there? They're going to let them cheat and he's probably going to win. That ain't no fun. So Toby had mentioned that from day one, we have to be consistent. We make mistakes. All promoters do. Everybody does. But we try to do the best we possibly can to be consistent for everybody. And that is, again, the beauty of IMCA.
Yeah, it is. It is what we do. It is our goal. And I do think it's why, contrary to what people may say on Facebook or in social media and any platform, it's why we're popular, and we are fairly popular. We have our ups and downs. We win some battles when it comes to sanctions, and we lose some. We hate to lose.
IMCA is still a thing.
We're still a thing. Last time I checked, okay. You know. But you know, we've got thousands and thousands of events, thousands and thousands of competitors, hundreds of promoters, you know, and hundreds of sponsors. It's a lot of moving parts in this association that we try to connect. In a way that is good for the sport, not the destructive for the sport, you know. So, but that's again, that's tech tips with Brett for the day on
Stock. That was a good shot. That was a good.
So if so when I get that hot rod out on a racetrack some decade, it's going to have a legal shock on the back of it.
Where are you going to race?
He'll have his pilot's license.
You're going to have your pilot's license before you race the stock car.
Quite possibly.
You'll be a grandpa before you race the stock car.
Well, that's not too far away. I mean, that's a given, Jim. I mean, come on. I mean, give us something we can actually hope for.
The racing grandpa, we'll call him.
Yeah, thanks. That'll be my nickname. That should be a podcast subject too, as well. How do racers get their nicknames? We'll have to save that for another one because we are literally.
Jerry, don't.
How late are we into this, Nate? We're over an hour.
But, oh, we're just over. It's not too. But we got more show and tell stuff.
No, we'll talk about some other time. It's just my
once
hat.
Again,
it's my hat demonstration. You know, that's not near as important as talking about shocks.
Oh, okay.
And with any of our rules, not every racer who gets caught with an illegal part is actually trying to cheat us. Let's make that clear. There were some. Once again, not trying to throw manufacturers under the bus. But I was in a situation down in Texas for the All-Star Tour where Marcus Hardcrow got disqualified Friday night at Boyd because of a carburetor, the boosters. And he had absolutely zero idea, okay? Not a clue on that, and I firmly believe that. But you know what? He didn't throw a fit. He didn't cry. He didn't cuss. He got another carburetor, and he came back and won the feature Sunday night at Waco and hired a Texas Speedway.
That's happened twice this year with some disqualifications.
You take your lumps, and I think racers that you know, we can't write race car rules that make bad racers.
You know, and I think
that make good racers,
and
great
I think
racers,
some
bad
of the
racers.
You know what I mean? We talk about how the evolution of the race car and the racer changes. You know, you get a lot of the racers now that don't know exactly what's in that carburetor because they don't know what it's supposed to be. They take the trust of the person that they bought it from that
Correct.
It was legal
Correct.
Because this guy's he's a known good person, and if he runs it, it's got to be legal because you know we've talked about it. The mechanical ability of some of the people that are involved in our sport just isn't what it was, and not saying anything bad about it, but it's not what it was 30 years ago where you still drove a carbureted vehicle and you worked on it to get to your regular job, where now you just get in, you turn a key, and your car goes. You don't have to worry about a carburetor. You don't have to worry about what do my shocks do. I think the technology that the people don't look at because they don't see it every day.
I think racers, you know, they can buy parts wherever they want to buy them from, you know, and you know, they can call a place like Speedway Motors that has tech or what I would consider to be customer service people that can answer some of those questions. If they say, hey, do you race IMCA? I know Performance Bodies does that as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've got racers that racing IMCA that, you know, can answer those questions, you know, if they're selling a carburetor or whatever it may be that they're selling. You know, the guy says, I'm racing IMCA, and he makes sure it's legal. They know the answers to those questions themselves, and some of that stuff we put some trust in. I can trust certain people when they buy some things for some places because they know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
but we can't control all of that. Somebody could very well easily pick up the phone at a carburetor company that we have no knowledge of, and say, "Oh yeah, this will meet the IMCA rules," and the racer buys it and he shows up to tech. He's bought it under one pretense. He doesn't have a set of gauges. Nope. More than likely, most racers don't. We stick a gauge in it, and boom, his booster's wrong. And he just gets disqualified. Well, if you go back to the comment about us notifying racers of what's legal and what's not legal, how do we address those situations? It is impossible for us to address those situations. We don't know what everybody's saying.
Well, I mean,
we don't know what people are telling people, their customers. You know, there's a lot of things. All we can do is control our variables and control ourselves and what we do.
But
we
it
do
all
our
comes
best
back
to try to maintain that.
It says, how do you got to tell me, you got to tell me. I mean, the rules are on your phone.
It's like
the rules are in a book that is mailed to you. The rules are on a computer. I mean,
this is what we could do to address that.
Can I hold your hand there, Ryan? Can I?
Well, it's like what Dave says in his column every month, know what you own.
Yeah.
Yes, but this is how some would think we should address that. It's called story time with Brett or story time with Dave. And we pick up our rules.
Well, is this
and we just read them to people. I mean, who the hell wants to listen to that? Nobody.
No.
I mean, but
I'll not do that because I'll probably get those calls.
Well, can you have Ryan read the rule book to me?
Story time. We could do story time with Ryan and play like that soft, like little kid music.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not realistic. You know, everybody has to kind of know the rules. Yeah. And if they say, hey, I don't understand this, we have many published outlets for them to get answers to their questions. You know, email, Facebook, our phones, you know, hell, some people are now trying to call me on Facebook Messenger. Do you know this?
I get them.
How the hell are they doing that? Well, my phone rang the other day, and I'm like,
Brett, if you go into the Facebook, into the Messenger, there's a little thing that's like looks like a phone.
Facebook,
and if you hit the, hang on
they
a minute.
Can call me from Facebook. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, hang on a minute. Let me show you.
How do they do that?
You never called anybody
and
on
I'm
Facebook
not answering
before?
It. Just for the record, I will not answer a phone call on Facebook. Just right there. Will not do it, Dan.
A little phone up top. See, Brett? Phone up top.
Yeah, but
iPhone hacks with Jerry Van Sickle.
But I'm just...
So if I approve somebody on Facebook to be my friend, which I haven't done in a long time,
but see, here's
if
the
I
deal.
Did
if
that...
they're on Messenger.
They can call me?
I'm looking on Messenger, but he doesn't...
Not through your phone number, but through...
It's like access to the bat phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a... It is. It's like a Marvel...
Hey, guys, Jerry.
Yeah, go ahead, caller.
Jerry, you figure that shit out with on Messenger, and you get me Brett's Messenger tag or what the heck it is. I'm gonna bother him every night about 8-9 o'clock every night until he answers. You guys all heard
Dan,
it. He wasn't gonna answer. He
Dan,
will answer.
Dan, have Irm have Irm show you, because she finally got you figured out how to use the Zoom. I'm not going to help you try and figure out how to use your phone.
Oh, shoot.
We'll have a Tuesday night camper chat about it. We'll sit around having some side pork.
Yeah, you got
side pork?
They call it
Otto's? Hey, are you going to Otto's to get side pork
There's one thing.
Dan Ratajczak makes a killer badass side pork. Side pork is unseasoned bacon, is what it is, and then you season it yourself. But the only way to cook it is over an open flame.
Who's where's this at?
At 141.
Oh my God! To answer your question now, Jerry.
Week, yes.
If Dan's got side pork, I will be there.
Ah, shit! He's fresh out.
Side pork.
You've never had side pork?
I've never heard of it.
Well, I've had like baby back ribs.
No, is that side pork? Dan,
they're over here.
Yeah, no. So Dan, help me out with side pork. It is what part of the hog does the side pork cut? Because Dan not only is a race promoter, not only is he a dairy farmer, but he now has a meat market too. He's in all kinds of businesses up there. So tell us about side pork.
Well, we have a little fun doing everything. You go back to the phone first. It's a smart phone, right? They call it smart phone for a damn reason. Last year, I would fry side pork out the last couple of years over open flame, like Jerry was saying, right? And I liked the side pork so much, so me and my two nephews and my son and my brother, we bought Otto's Meats in Luxburg, and now I get all the side pork I want, right? Boom, every day. So, Brett, if you ever had side pork, I ain't bringing it down there, but if you come up, I'll do a little bit after the races one night for you.
Yeah, so just here, I'll read this. What is side pork? It is pork belly, which is sometimes called side pork, comes from the underside of the hog, from the primal known as the side. The term is usually used interchangeably, but sometimes a butcher will label the meat from the lower portion of the side as pork belly and the upper portion as side pork. Now, you can, if you get side pork, get it without the rind. Correct, Dan?
Well, yeah, it is good without the rind, but you can get the rind in it too, and the rind is the skin of the pig.
So that's like the silver skin on the inside of a baby back, which when I smoke, you take like a paper towel and rip that inner off a baby back.
I leave them on when I do mine because I do.
Amateur hour, Jerry. Amateur hour. You take the silver skin off the inside of your ribs before you smoke them. That's a fact.
Absolutely.
I learned that from a guy in Texas that knows what he's talking about.
Okay, so what a pass tack.
Some places.
Okay, okay.
You know, those barbecue contests, they have all kinds of rules, too.
Get the rule book out.
Can you read it to me, Dan?
Membrane's got to come off.
Yes, you are correct.
The membrane, that's what they call it.
There's no doubt about it.
Yep. Okay,
it's been an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Nate says, wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Wrap it up like some side pork next week.
Like some baby backs.
Ooh. Or some brisket or something. Now you got me thinking. Brisket, he's that little cow guy out here at the Benton County Bullring.
Yeah, he is.
Again, where's remind everyone.
Where's IMCA TV at next week?
Everywhere.
Yeah, where are we? We've got IMCA.
Ooh, the Tougher Than Dirt Tour. That's the old beater tour. Then you got some
hobbies.
I think we're also broadcasting Independence. One of a couple of events in Independence, I think, is
this Saturday. Oh, it's Hall of Fame night.
Yeah, it's Hall of Fame night.
Which is
a pretty big night in Independence Motor Speedway. We're kind of cool to broadcast that, and we're going to go back, I think, in July on the 23rd and do another Saturday night broadcast at Independence. So be sure to tune into IMCA TV if you want to watch.
Oh, I watched the IMCA TV for Eagle. Them bus races were kick-ass.
Those were pretty cool.
Holy Jesus. They were great.
We're supposed to be wrapping up, Jerry.
No, but I got to tell you, you got to go back and watch.
We have to split this into two episodes, Nate.
The damn bus races, those were cooler than hell. Yeah, you go if you want to see the Eagle Raceway bus races, go watch them on the Facebook.
They're going to have buses at 141 before you know it. Do you have buses up there, Dan?
Yeah, he's got a bus that goes at 141 a.m.
Isn't that the one Scott drives?
That's the one Scott drives.
Like racing.
The one Scott drives.
Hey, couple other things.
We don't need to talk about that though, right?
That's how we clear the left turn lounge out and shut her down as everybody goes for a bus ride.
That's the off-air conversation.
And they may go swimming in the pond, and it is clothing optional at 141 in the morning.
Another couple races coming up this weekend up at Fargo at Red River Valley Speedway. They have the Bison Battle on Friday, the prelude to the Bison Battle Thursday at Norman County. I think it's a third annual Don Gumpke Memorial at Jamestown on Saturday night.
A lot of racing. They're finally getting
big races for that part of the country, too.
Yes.
Very popular.
I suppose. Should we let the people go back to normalcy? And so, well, thanks for joining us on episode number 12.
11. 11 is heaven. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Really?
So now we're going to go to number 12. Or
this one ran over, so we call it.
Yeah, this is 11. This 11 is an 11th.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us on number 11. Number 12, we'll week or two. You never know. I mean, maybe we could. Maybe
you're
going
to be in Wisconsin. Maybe we'll both have to zoom in.
Maybe we'll both have to zoom in. Maybe we could share this.
Do a podcast without you.
Just Brett and I.
Hey, if you do one without me, I promise. I will not have like a episode meltdown or
maybe
anything.
Maybe next week you and I could do one with Bill or Virginia.
Episode 12
like
will
that.
Be story time with Ryan and Brett.
There you go.
I'm good
soft
for that.
Music. Oh. We'll tell fun stories.
You can have it. Yes.
What'd you say, Jim?
And a rule book.
Yeah, and the rule book.
Dan's all about that rule book.
Yes.
Hey, house rules, right, Danny? Grandpa Ritajczyk's house rules.
House rules, baby. House rules.
All right. We hope you enjoyed the episode number 11. We'll see you for 12 in the near future. And for all things IMCA, check it out at imca.com. That's where you can find your rules and stuff like that. And also, if you want to get a replay pass or tune in what's coming up on IMCA TV, set out to IMCA TV. Whether you can catch a IMCA event local near you or on IMCA TV, you can always watch racing. Even if it rains out, you can watch racing from somewhere else. So have a great week. Enjoy some great IMCA racing.